Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Jen Liu Show.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm not doing the song. Welcome to the Jen Liu Show. I am the co-host, Jake Pentland. Happy to join you all. It's getting bad. The last few weeks, you've been blowing me out of the water. You've been smarter. You've been better. So I've asked Susie and Eli not to come on here so that I could really have a one-on-one with you that you need to go. It's not working out.
Okay, I'm out of here. Well, to be fair, you've been actually working at your job, so you've been a little busy.
That's a good point.
You deserve a little slack.
Thank you. I did prep before better when I wasn't so busy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, without laughing. Anyway, welcome to the Jake Pentland Show. It is a pre-tape. I am out of town this weekend, but it's just going to go live. We've got I'm very excited for our guest today. It's Philip Van Cleve of the Virginia Citizens Defense League. I think I said that right. And we'll go to him in a second. But anyway, are we all caught up, Jen? Everything good? We're ready to get on with this?
We are ready for this. We are ready to shoot him up.
I'm stalling because I can't find the friggin' email on my iPhone of his information, and I want to sound smart. I'm just gonna have to go live. He can hear me now.
An email isn't gonna do that for you.
Let's just go live with Philip. Why I find the email? Are you there, Philip?
Yeah, I'm here. Uh huh.
Is that am I pronouncing your name right? Correct?
Yeah, it's Philip Van Cleve. Uh huh.
Okay. Sorry about that. Normally we do the show Saturday, so I'm doing the show from my office, and I'm supposed to be working right now. So I apologize if I'm a little confused. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to talk to you. I did see you on Piers Morgan, and I did see you actually in The Daily Show. I don't know when that was taped, but I did see that segment because it kind of became slightly viral, would you say?
Yeah, it's amazing what editing can do.
Well, just so you know, my real job is I'm a television producer and editor. And although I do like The Daily Show, I will be honest with you, I found myself very upset at that segment because, I mean, no one should be surprised that that's a comedy show. It's not a real news show. And what they do is they'll interview you and set it up, and then they'll edit it for laughter.
Oh yeah, they edited the heck out of that thing. It's not at all what it seems. You know, you'll sit there and you'll repeat the same thing. They'll say, "Oh no, you smiled, so look serious and say, you know, and then now talk again." And you know, and of course, all the places where I had them scratching their heads, none of that shows up. It's like the Wizard of Oz, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. It's all it's all kind of fake. But, yeah, and I had no idea how it was ultimately going to turn out. I figured if they were going to make fun of both sides, and I had no problem with that. But, of course, it didn't turn out that way. But you have no way of knowing that.
No, you don't. And that is the thing. Actually, for people that don't know, we are going to be talking about gun control and guns. And there are a few issues in America that I've found that we're more divided on as a country. I mean, maybe abortion or religion. Like, there's a few. There's this small collection of things that just everybody gets mad and crazy about, and nobody can come to any sort of rational conversation. And this is one of the big ones, especially the last few years with the increase in cable news reporting, shootings. We all know about Columbine, and there was just a shooting recently in D.C., and it seems that this issue, while it's always sort of been on the surface here, it seems to be bubbling to the very, very top. This is something everybody's got an opinion on, and when The Daily Show is going to do a gun control issue, they're not going to do both sides. So I'm going to give you a chance to really tell your side. I kind of felt like you were railroaded in there, and again, although I like that show, this is I do lean more left politically. When it comes to gun control, I am an NRA member. You should know that. And this is one of the issues where I couldn't disagree with my quote-unquote constituents or whatever you want to call them more. I'm very, very against gun control. So I'm going to let you just pretend you're on The Daily Show right now, and you could say what you wanted to say there that they edited out before we get started.
Oh, I mean, it was quite a bit. I mean, like a lot of various issues came up, and I can't remember. I mean, the interview went on for like 4 hours. So you cover a lot of ground. They have an infinite amount of stuff almost to play with there. But I think one of the points I was trying to get across in this was that you know, they still have plenty of crime, plenty of violence based around guns in Australia, and while they try to cover that up, it's there. In fact, after the show, I got lots of emails from people in Australia saying, you know, you were where you were trying to go was exactly correct, and they sent me copies of you know, various murders and other things going on dealing with guns. So yeah, it was interesting. So, but again, they simply edited all of that stuff out. So things were out of sequence. I really wouldn't even know where to begin.
Gotcha.
I was hoping that there would be some serious points in there that we could address. And whenever I did hit something, like I said, where they were kind of sitting there with their mouths open, oh, that was a good answer, those were chopped. And what I regret was I didn't tape it myself, so that people could hear the 4 hours of back and forth and how something like that's actually filmed.
Well, luckily you're on the Jake Pentland Show. This is the last open forum, as far as I'm concerned, on any medium. I mean, everyone I've had on here, whether I've agreed or disagreed, they've always been able to tell their side, and that just seems to be going against the current of modern television and radio. Everybody's sort of got a political bias, and I think this is the real reason why this discussion is seemingly becoming less and less cogent on both sides, is because it becomes more about grandstanding and arguing and making the other side look dumb than actually talking the point. So you started, tell me if I get this right, the Virginia Citizens Defense League, is that correct, the VCDL?
Yes, that's correct. Uh-huh, yes.
Explain your organization, because before we booked you, we were trying to book a few other people that were in the NRA, and I've tweeted out that you were an NRA member, but this is something separate than the NRA, yes?
Oh, absolutely. I'm just a member of the NRA. I in no way can speak for them. I can speak for my organization, which has 6,000 members and 26,000 people that subscribe to a free email alert system that we have where we communicate to gun owners in Virginia. That organization I can speak for, not the NRA. I am a member of their organization, but that's all I am. I'm just one out of 4 million. So, but we, you know, while we're not affiliated with them, our goals are similar. We're considered to the right of the NRA. You know, we've oftentimes looked at things they're doing and look at it as being wishy-washy on a protected right, and have fought to move the bar more to the liberty side for people. And by the way, our organization absolutely recognizes that there are liberals that are very pro-gun, even though they have, you know, maybe they're conservative. They're liberal in maybe more of the social way, but they really are very much for gun rights. We're non-political that way. There are Republicans that don't understand guns. There's Republicans that understand them very well. There's Democrats that don't understand them, and Democrats that do. And then you've got all your other groups. You've got all your religions. We don't care about anything but gun rights. If you're for guns, then you know you're more than welcome into the organization. We don't care about race, anything. Huh?
You're a non-partisan organization. It's grassroots.
Absolutely. Yeah. We are non-partisan. We're non-profit. And we're proud of that. We like the fact that we have a broader coalition out there. But, you know, you can't help but look at an organization like ours and still see that there is still trends in the country. You know, we have, for example, way more white members than we do blacks. We're trying to get more black people involved in gun rights, which is something that's always amazed me on the surface. I've had a little investigation. I think I understand the culture there more now, but it always amazed me. I thought, well, if I was black, the last thing on earth I'd ever want again is to have me or my family or my future generations going back into slavery because of one reason or another. Why? Therefore, I would want to be armed. I would want to. The Second Amendment would be an important thing for me. And so we're trying to reach out in a lot of different directions. But we have liberal Democrats, we have conservative Republicans, we have libertarians, we have atheists, we've got Catholics, we've got Jews, and all that. It's all focused on one goal, that at the end of the day, we recognize that the Second Amendment protects all of the rest of the amendments, and that's the canary in the coal mine. When it goes, then everything else is going to go.
So that was my first question, actually. I mean, are you this passionate about protecting the other amendments or anything else in the Constitution, or this is the main draw of your group?
Well, the organization is focused on the Second Amendment. That is our focus. However, that's not to be confused with if, while trying to protect the Second Amendment, our First Amendment rights are trampled on, you know, we will address that as well. And actually, it's funny that you asked that, because literally last night we had one of those rare occasions when the two cross. We were carrying signs out at a university. There were two candidates. Our lieutenant governor's candidates were speaking at a debate, and outside, you know, you had the two groups, you know, pro-gun, anti-gun, and yet the university moved us off of the public campus onto the sidewalk. They moved everybody. It wasn't just our side, but we looked at that and said, you know, you don't have the authority to do that. You know, this was a First Amendment issue in that case, so we had to stand on the sidewalk instead of by the building. It's a public university. So
right.
We're probably going to come back and address that.
Very cool. So you consider yourself basically like a watchdog of the Constitution. You're just focused on the Second Amendment purely.
That's our main focus. Yeah, we don't sit there and somebody comes and says, "Oh, my First Amendment rights," because I was carrying a sign at some. You know, we don't fool with that. It's got to be.
Gotcha.
It's got to, in some way or another, be centered around your right to bear arms.
And when you said it's the canary in the coal mine, I mean, I think I know what you mean by that. Are you saying that if the Second Amendment were repealed and we weren't allowed to arm ourselves, that basically the fear is, and I've heard this from a lot of, and this is, I think, more of a right wing approach, if this is what you're saying, that basically at this point the government can come in and we can't protect ourselves at all? Is that the fear?
Right. So the other rights would then start to fall because the populace would be unable to do anything but just sit there and watch, kind of like, you know, what happened to Germany in World War II. You know, in fact, this is a general trend. Anytime a country is taken over by a foreign military, the first thing they do is they disarm the populace. And that's not an accident. That's not some coincidence. There's a reason for that. You want the populace to be submissive, not to be able to fight back to whatever you do, be that line them up and kill them or simply strip them of all their rights or any other tyrannical thing you wish to do.
Do you really – I'm sorry. This is Jen. I'm
sorry. Yeah,
how
I didn't
know
you.
Hi. Do you feel that it's realistic that we really ever would lose that right? Like, I don't feel like that's what people are going after, just stricter gun laws. I mean, there's the few extremists that seem to say, yeah, let's all turn in our guns, but I really don't feel like my husband's a police officer, so we're a gun family, but I just don't see it going that direction ever for America, that they would completely want to disarm us.
Well, I wish I could share that optimism with you. I don't know that this would happen anytime soon. These things sometimes, especially in a country like America, in fact, it could be argued that the fact that we are armed is one thing that has kept America free all these years. Our founding fathers, several of them were convinced that we would, you know, would probably have to basically take back the country every 30 or 40 years after politicians got done stripping our rights away. But that didn't happen, and part of that is probably because they may have underestimated the Second Amendment. And it's actually been used in America. I don't know if you're aware of that, but right after World War II in Georgia, I believe it was Georgia, if I'm not mistaken, either Georgia or Tennessee, a corrupt city, corrupt mayor and some other people basically totally destroyed the results of an election and basically just made themselves the head of the town regardless of how the people voted. And this was after World War II, and the whole thing was, you know, totally, totally illegitimate. And indeed, the returning vets that lived in the area got together, and they took up arms and took back their town. And it's a very interesting story that happened after World War II. Again, that's odd. Yes, we don't see that in America generally. That was an odd thing. But the problem is that tyranny is the general trend for government. Again, the Founding Fathers talked about this, and they knew a lot about it. And you just kind of have to look around you around the world, and you can see this constant trend towards government getting bigger and more imposing. And it's happening here, too. It's just a trend. People do this. It's the kind of people that are attracted sometimes to serve in the government. Some of them are excellent. Some have truly have the country's better values in mind. But then some are attracted because they like power. Look at Bloomberg. They like power. They like to be to tell other people what to do, to be all controlling. That's unfortunately when those people get in power, you got problems.
Well, you make
a
good point.
Go ahead.
No, don't be sorry. Talk. It's your show too.
Do you feel that's what I wanted to ask? I wanted to ask, do you feel that's what's happening now? Them withdrawing a lot of the federal funding, even if it is temporary. I feel like it's a huge controlling tactic that they're doing. I mean, literally taking away food from children right now. Do you feel that's a way that they're somewhat bullying us?
I don't know. You know, there are so many different things out there that, you know, one can feel pressure. You know, it's hard to say. And I don't know that, you know, I can stand back and say, oh, it's all one big coordinated effort. No, I don't believe that. I believe it just tends to be something that kind of gets gained steam and rolls along. And it's just a natural projection that pretty soon, you know, this right and that right are taken away. I mean, I look at things that have been happening just over the last decade. Now, for example, if you want to if you want to take the Fifth, you have to make sure you verbally tell a police officer that you're taking the Fifth. Otherwise, your silence can be used against you. You've got to actually say that. You can't just sit there quietly and not say anything. You've got to say, I'm taking the Fifth, and this is why I'm sitting here silently. That's just one tiny example. They're going on and on and on. Where you know, look how we've naturally progressed with the police departments. Where they now we've got these SWAT teams. They are actually, you know, paramilitary. They carry military weapons. Their identities are concealed. They have these big teams that kick in doors and go into houses. I mean, policing was never like that in the past, and America survived quite well. The trend towards the militarization of police is something that should concern everybody. Military's got a different role. Police are supposed to carry a gun, for example, for self-defense. It's not an aggressive thing that they carry them for. It's to defend themselves. So if the police show up at a scene, their job is to keep things peaceful, to try to keep it under control and take care of the situation. With the military, if you tell them to go from point A to point B, anything in the middle that tries to stop them or shows resistance or is there, they can kill it and move on. It's a different mindset, and there's a reason that we don't allow, with the Posse Comitatus Act, allow the military to have domain inside the United States itself.
You bring up a lot of interesting points, and I mean, I know you obviously haven't heard this show, but one of the things we do on this show is we try and look at even issues like this, hot-button issues that most people are scared of, in sort of an approach about humanity and psychology. And I know that sounds weird, but once you start seeing the patterns, everything clicks. I think the biggest issue on gun control between you and me is that the people that are pro-gun control are completely paranoid that everybody that has a gun is going to go shoot their children. And the people that are anti-gun control are completely paranoid too far to think that the government's going to come in and militarize and take them and take their houses. Not saying that either side doesn't have an argument. I mean, there are shootings in the streets, so I can understand people being afraid of a wacko having a gun, and you make a case about World War II and the history of tyrannical governments, and both sides do make a portion of a good argument. The bottom line is, it just seems for me, as someone who's a little more objective on this, that as long as both sides of the argument entrench themselves further into the paranoia, that's just further we're getting away from any sort of compromise, and both sides doing that.
If you want to,
that's just my opinion.
Back away from that's a valid point. I mean, I recognize we live in a wonderful country. When I teach handgun classes, I'll ask people, how many of you have ever been so close to death that you truly thought you had 2 or 3 seconds to live? You truly thought it was over. And it's rare that anybody raises their hands. And if they do, it's usually somebody that's been in the military or whatever. So we actually, you know, we live in a fairly safe country, probably one of the safest in the world. You wouldn't know that from watching the media, but for 300 and something odd million people, it's actually a very safe place to live. But there are two other reasons that the Second Amendment was put in place. All right, so let's sidestep for now the government part of that, of being able to take back the country should it ever the government become tyrannical. Let's set that aside. That was only one of three. The other one was self-defense.
Right.
Not necessarily from the government, from anything. If you can't protect your life, then your life is worthless. It's got no meaning. It's got no value. Let's just say no meaning. Let's just say no value. If anybody can come up and kill you at will, and that's it, and you can't do anything, you know, that's just unthinkable in my mind that such a thing would happen. So that was item. That was like the first item. The second item was actually protection of the country in the case something bad happened. The citizens could step forward and defend the country. Now,
like
yeah,
a Red Dawn
you know,
scenario.
I'm sorry. Well,
like a foreign invader.
Yes and no. But let me give you a more realistic scenario. How about a scenario where Al Qaeda strikes and something really bad happens? And the police are basically either out of commission, maybe the radio systems are down, maybe there's no electricity. Basically, some really bad thing happens. Maybe it's a huge natural disaster, and all the power's gone. The police are overwhelmed. In a situation like that, I could see people in their own neighborhoods banding together until the government could get on its own feet and providing, for example, their own defense. Because there is no 911, there is no police for the time being, or assisting the government in the case it needed assistance. It was just overwhelmed. It needed citizens to come up and help provide things, so
right.
Maybe security. So those are two other angles that are critical parts of the Second Amendment.
No, those are all three valid points, and again, why I, even with my politics being a little more left-leaning, did join the NRA because I wanted to be able to defend myself. And a gun, in my opinion, is the best tool for the job and the safest tool for the job in my house. And they're also, you know, awesome. Let's not kid ourselves. And, I do know my history. I do study American history. And, I won't go off in a big old history lesson, but the famous crossing of the Delaware with George Washington that basically turned the tide of the Revolution, a lot of people don't know that that was pre-battle, and there was a battle that following morning, and the enemy soldiers weren't always British. They were Hessians. They were bought.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what happened is they retreated when they saw Washington coming. into the homes of citizens that had basically they've been raping and pillaging because they were winning the war against us. And a lot of people don't know this, but our citizens turned gunfire on them, and that's how we won that particular battle that day. Citizens did get involved in their houses, women with, you know, shotguns or whatever they had. And it's a cool story. That is very much rooted in American history. These things do happen. And
yeah.
I, for all three of the cases that you provided, the only thing I can say that makes me nervous is if you talk about post-Katrina, for instance, and you're talking about a natural disaster, power's out, the government's not providing. And can you imagine inside the Superdome or other cases if everyone was armed? And I'm not saying disarm people, but it's not as simple to say citizens are just going to come provide security for the government, because a lot of people are going to use it to shoot people for Heinekens.
But
that's
why you want everybody armed. Yeah, the bad guys are going to get guns and carry them in there. There's probably no doubt there were weapons inside that area. You can't even keep guns out of prisons. They found guns in prisons. They found,
right,
you know, knives and other things. So you have no way of guaranteeing that bad guys won't be there. That's why you don't want to disarm the good guys wherever they are. And looking back at exactly at Katrina, you had cases where neighborhoods did exactly what I've just suggested. People got together and were armed and had safe, protected neighborhoods. Nobody was coming to their neighborhoods to loot because they were armed and nobody wanted to mess with them. Until the police showed up, disarmed them, took all their guns, and then left them with no protection. Now, who gains in a situation like that? Who were they protecting is the question. You know, so this is and there was a lot of hell to pay for a lot of things that happened in Katrina. And indeed, I think a couple officers were convicted of murder during
right.
that time and so forth. So You never know, but it's like an insurance policy. I pray I never need to use any of my insurance policies, like on the house burning down or something. But you've got to have them before whatever it is happens. So while I carry a gun, I pray I never have to use it. But, you know, it's there, and it's comforting to know that it's there in case whatever happens that would threaten me or my family or my friends.
I mean, it seems like a rational argument. I don't know why this argument spins the way it spins, but, you know, one of the things I tend to go back and forth and pay attention to both sides, because my other philosophy is pretty much every argument, if you're objective, both sides have a portion of the truth and a portion of their own dysfunctional garbage, and then that's why it gets clouded. So I can see the counter argument where if you did really have gun control, we're talking about an ideal, you know, this is a hypothetical thing, so bear with me. I know it's impossible, but let's just say they managed to blow up every gun, self-destruct around the world. There's no guns. And here in America, everybody is, wouldn't, by the extension, if there were no guns, is my question, wouldn't everybody then be safer? I mean, of course, people would still have swords and knives and all that, but if there were no guns, you wouldn't have to arm yourself against the bad guy who's got a bigger gun and then keep stepping up, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. So you prefer that would be the law of the jungle, which would say, for example, the 250-pound, 20-year-old male who decides he would like to have sex with your little 5'2" wife that weighs 125 pounds. What's she going to do? What is she going to do? It's over for her. There's no way she's going to stop somebody that big. She doesn't have the strength. She doesn't have anything going for her. One punch and she's out. It's over. So that's not the kind of world I want to live in, because there will always be evil out there. There will always be somebody that's bigger, meaner, and younger than you that wants something you have. Maybe it's your life. Maybe if you're a woman, it's your, you know, it's you. Maybe
but you
it's your children.
I hear you, but it doesn't have to be the absence of gun means that you can no longer protect yourself. I mean, there are other means of self-defense. I mean, they may not be as effective. I mean, if you're talking about bear mace or rape spikes, I mean, have you seen rape spikes? Those things are terrifying. Not that I've seen one. I've only heard.
But you know.
But I mean, there are, like, this is just something I want to point out to you. I agree with you, trust me, but it's just, in order to move progress and make progress in this country, we have to start making concessions. We have to start making compromises. And for you to say the absence of guns means there's going to be a big rape-a-palooza on the street, that's slightly disingenuous, in my opinion. There are other ways to defend yourself.
Well, it's interesting. It doesn't work very well in other countries where they don't have guns. I mean, they've got some, they get lawlessness going, and that's it. Yes, sometimes there's safety in numbers, but again, even there, you just can't. You know, how can you expect a 5'2" woman, even if she's got a knife, to be strong enough to compete with a big, powerful man, or even an elderly person? You've got a 90-year-old. And some gangbanger decides he wants that 90-year-old's wallet, and he's willing to kill him or break bones to get it. What is that guy supposed to do? You tell me. What can he do? Hit him with a wheelchair? He may not be able to get out of the wheelchair. the right to protect yourself is so critical that we should never be restricted, and you cannot. Of course, and again, you've made the whole thing a presumption. This is how the joke kind of came in. On the show, Daily Show, this is exactly how we ended up with Planet X. They totally edited everything to make it look like I said Australia was Planet X. That wasn't the case. The discussion went back and forth. They said, what if we could have a world where there were no guns? And I said, you can't do it. You can make them in your garage. I mean, the genie's out of the bag. It's not hard to make a gun. You cannot stop people from creating them. Even criminals make guns out of fountain pens. But let's pretend you can do it. I kept saying, no, you can't do it. Finally, I just threw up my hands and said, okay, we're on Planet X, and somehow you've done this. Let's go from there. That's how we ended up there, because I know there's no way you can prevent guns. You can't, from being in the hands
of
anybody. You can't do it. There's no way.
No, I agree with
you. So that's off the table. The bad guys will have guns. So what do you want to have instead? You know, you want to throw dirt at them or something? I think you need to have something able to protect yourself with. And against the gun, your best protection is another gun.
Do you support the stricter, because I guess, like, I'm with you. I think if we all had no guns, yes, I think ultimately there'd be less gun deaths. But do you feel that, I mean, I don't know how to explain it the right way. And I lost my train of thought.
Welcome to taking over. It's not so easy, is it, Jen?
I know.
No, I'm kidding. You're going to say...
Stricter gun laws. That's what I was going to say. Are you against, like, the deep background checks, and which I'm very supportive of? You know, I am married to a police officer, so I come from that world of wanting to know who has the guns. But I also have one, and it's not registered to me, so I technically cannot use it, but I would use
Plus
it.
Plus, you start off.
We don't register guns, and most of the country does not register guns. Here in Virginia, there is no registration. Nothing's registered to you, you know? It's just your gun.
See, and that's a problem to me. You don't see that as a problem? Like,
no, not at all. I grew up, I'm clearly much older than you. I grew up in the 50s and 60s when you could go into a hardware store, buy a hammer, nails, and say, tell them to throw in a shotgun and some shells. And
right.
But you didn't hear about school shootings or anything else back then. Yeah, there was some gun violence, but it was not a big deal. And there were no background
checks.
But
now we have the school shootings, that which is becoming a trend, and now we have naval yard shootings.
Yeah,
and
all since we started background
checks. If someone
checks.
Takes your gun and does it, you know, it would just, to me, it's just safer. We have so many crazy people now, too.
But you can't stop them. The background check is, to me, I'm an ex-deputy sheriff as well. I spent 6 years in the Bexar County Sheriff's Department in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot stop a bad guy from getting a gun. Let me put it to you this way. Let's say we had universal background checks. You could not buy a gun from anybody legally without going through a background check. Private sales, public sales, you know, nothing. All somebody has to do is what they're doing now, which is get a person who's got a clean background, you know, pay them some money, and they'll go in and buy the gun. They'll pass whatever background check you want to throw at them, and they'll walk out with the gun, and they're going to hand it to the criminal.
Right.
You cannot stop that.
But a lot of these are crazy kids in a basement, you know, that are on medications. You know, a lot of the shootings that people are so upset about and wanting gun control over, a lot of them are these kids in basements who have parents that have guns. And I am saying, if someone in your home, just like if there's a felon in your home, you're not allowed to have weapons in your home. Same thing. If you choose,
that's not true.
Well, in our state, actually, California, has very strict gun laws. So when people are talking about getting stricter gun laws, I think they're talking about a lot of the other states in our country, probably a lot of southern ones.
Yeah, I don't know if they can get much stricter here in California.
We have very
like
strict gun laws here. Yeah,
yeah,
I think that's all we could add would be no guns with anyone on antidepressants in your home. You know, so
yeah, well,
which
then
we
that would eliminate almost everybody, including all the police, probably. So, but
no, they're not allowed to be on antidepressants. But.
No, they can't.
If you say not in their family either, then you know.
Oh, I know. I'm sure. There's
everybody's got a kid
on
Ritalin or something. The government hands out this stuff like candy anymore.
That'll
help. Is a whole other issue as to how they're going to be attacking our gun rights, and you need to be careful what you ask for. You know, you really do. But, I mean, the Russians used insanity as their way of controlling people who didn't believe in communism. You know, if you didn't believe in communism, then you clearly had a mental issue, and they sent you off to be reeducated or mentally fixed before you came back into society. So, but anyhow, you know, all that gun control you've got in California, when I visit there, I definitely don't feel any safer than I do here in Virginia, which is a fraction of what you've got. When I go to D.C., that's really scary. And they've got gun control that makes your gun control look like, you know, you guys are, you know, are Alabama or something, you know.
Right.
And it's a very dangerous place. Over and over, you start looking at where they have all the gun control, and all it does is make it easier for the criminals. Where do the mass shootings happen? Think about this. Go back to the mass shootings.
Oh, no, I'm with you. Chicago.
Every one of them has been in a gun-free zone, even what happened in Aurora. That theater that the shooter chose was miles from his house. There were theaters in between that were bigger showing the same movie, and he went by all of those, and he picked the only one at the time that had a gun-free zone policy. There were no guns allowed in that theater. And it goes on and on and on. In fact, we had an unfortunate mass murderer wannabe who went into a mall last year, right before the Connecticut massacre. This is in Oregon. He went into a mall in Oregon, and he took an AR-15 in there, and he shot two people, and the rifle jammed. Well, it turns out that was a gun-free mall. The doors were marked, but there was a concealed handgun permit holder who didn't see the door and didn't notice the sign. So he went in thinking he was fine carrying his gun. And when this guy, when the bad guy's gun jammed, the good guy pulled out his gun, pointed it at him. The bad guy saw that and then killed himself. And who knows how many lives. And that's covered. If you look that up in the Oregon press, it was covered there but never talked about in the national press. And so it's another fascinating story. It was a gun-free zone that went wrong. It actually allowed, inadvertently had somebody with a gun, and it saved who knows how many lives. He had an AR-15. He was intending to kill a lot of people, and he got two.
Virginia Tech with Cho was also a gun-free zone. And
correct.
Does seem to be, and I have seen this argued many times by people that are anti-gun control, that it seems the areas that are the most policed and controlled seem to be where gun crimes are the highest. And that seems to be a statistic that's really hard to ignore and argue.
Yeah, Chicago. Oh, boy, Chicago.
Yeah.
And they have extremely, and again, Chicago is another one that makes California look like a haven for gun lovers, you know. and yet, you talk about some deadly stuff going on, young kids getting killed and everything, because the people that are doing these murders, they're not like you and I. They don't have empathy. They don't have a way of looking at somebody and thinking, oh, my God, I couldn't hurt a child. Oh, what would it be like? They don't have that. They're missing that part of their brain, and they're merciless. There's no way out. You can't beg, plead. It doesn't matter if you're holding a kid. They had a lady with a toddler who didn't give up her wallet to somebody, and I think it was Georgia, and the guy says, I'm going to shoot your baby unless you give me your money, and she didn't have any, and he shot the baby.
I saw that. That was horrible.
Yeah, she's lucky.
Yeah. And how do you deal with somebody like
she's
that?
She's lucky.
It's like a own built-in bulletproof. That's Jen has three
kids.
Oh,
my gosh.
But the guy jammed
on her,
herself from somebody like that unless she was armed. That would have been her only hope of protecting herself.
Let me ask you this, Phil. What is your ideal America? Like, if you were president or chancellor or however it worked out, and we're just talking gun laws now. You don't have to start talking about other things you would do.
Right, no, I understand.
Weird. Yeah. Maybe just gun, like, what would it be? There's just no restriction, no background check, mental health restriction, nothing. Or you tell me. I mean, I don't want to presume.
Well, for the.
I mean, is there a limit on kind of weapon? Is there, like, should everyone have a bazooka?
No, I don't see any limits on any type of firearm. Again, people, he's got a 50 Browning machine gun, one of those great big powerful rifles. Yet no crimes have ever been committed with one, but yet all kinds of people want to ban them. I don't see any advantage to picking some rifle and saying, or a handgun or whatever, saying, we need to ban this. No, there wouldn't be any of that. I personally don't see any real benefit to the background check. Is if you're counting upon that stopping somebody from getting a gun, then, you know, your hopes are sadly misplaced. Now, maybe age limits, 18 and up. That's pretty much how it is now in most areas. You can own a handgun, by the way, I don't know if you knew this. You can own, and here in Virginia, you can openly carry a handgun at 18. But you can't buy one from a dealer under federal law until you're 21. So to get the handgun, you'd have to have somebody in your family give it to you or buy it from a friend or something like that. But stupid law. Again, there's that's dumb. You know, it's legal to have it. We're not going to let a dealer sell it to you. What? So,
yeah.
So all that, you know, I just don't see any real advantages to any of that. My view is the Second Amendment should be the Second Amendment. People should be allowed to protect themselves. Now, when you get into felonies, then you're entering an interesting area. For me, violent felons, those that have raped, robbed, murdered, those type of people as best you can, but you don't fool yourself in thinking you can keep them from having a gun. You can put it something, you know, possibly, but maybe that would you're back to some kind of background check, or I don't know. I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, see,
at the end of the day, they're still going to get guns. So you're still
But
you can minimize it.
And if they get pulled over for speeding and they have a gun with them, then it can be a felony charge again. So
you could just simply do that and not have the background check and simply say, you know, if you catch one of these, a violent felon with this. I mean, you know, I look at it as far as general felonies. Let me tell you something. And California is another leader in this mess. Everything is becoming a felony anymore. You know, you kill the wrong bird. You know, you do this, you do that, things that you would never have been a felony in the past. Now to be tough on crime, we got felonies flying everywhere. God knows how many times over the last month maybe you and I had been doing something that was, we were, you know, could have been charged with a felony. We have no idea. Here in Virginia, we had a guy that had bolt cutters in his trunk. He just kept them in his trunk. Well, he allowed the police to search his car, which the answer to that is always no if they ask. But he said, okay, and they found bolt cutters. And he said, well, yeah, so what? He said, that's felony possession of a burglary tool. Didn't matter, he wasn't a burglar. So, I mean, this is just one tiny example of all the felonies. So our view, my organization's view on this, and the board is just in agreement on this, that when if a nonviolent felon, once he serves his time, whatever it is that the state said he needed to do to make reparations for his punishment, once he's done that, he should get his rights back.
I agree with that.
Violent felons, no. Nonviolent, right. Violent felons, no. Nonviolent, yes. Let them have their rights back. They paid their time. They did whatever it is they're supposed to do. If they screw up again, another nonviolent felony, well, then they're back to doing their time, and they lose their rights until they're through paying back society.
But, Phil, you can see when you started talking about violent felons, you did start to go the way of background checks. I mean, you talked yourself out of it, but you were heading that way.
The better idea is simply to do the idea of saying if you're making a law so that you can't, the violent felon can't possess, and therefore if they're caught possessing, then they're charged with that. That's the cool way of doing it.
You wouldn't do a background, like if someone came in to buy a gun and they happened to be a violent felon, you could stop them right there. You wouldn't support that.
Do you know how many people were stopped stopped permanently by being arrested and taken off to jail last year by the federal government for violations of the NICS system? I think it was like 50-something. There were lots of stops, and a lot of the stops, it turns out, weren't valid. You know, your name matched up very similarly to somebody in Idaho that had committed a crime and was disqualified, so they told you couldn't have a gun. Later on, it got worked out and you got your gun, but you're still counted as having been turned away. The vast majority of those turnaways are exactly that situation.
But again,
you
can understand the opposite side of your argument, which is, you know, again, both sides have a little bit of truth and both sides are kind of screwy, that if somebody says, I would support a background check, that's not the same as we want to take your guns and we want the government to come in and you start naming all these laws that you make a valid point. There's a lot of crazy laws on the book, but there's still, you're talking about increase in percentage of clean background checks. If somebody doesn't have a proper background, whether it's a felon or a history of violence, they don't get a gun. Yeah, they can still go buy a gun and file off serial numbers. Like, no one believes it's going to stop, but you could cut the numbers down, you know, tremendously by just having background checks on them.
You're implying we're cutting the numbers down tremendously right now. Do you really believe that?
No, I mean, I'm just saying the national argument of when the gun control people say we want just a little stricter laws, I'm not for it. I'm just asking you to look at the other side. Response is there's no way everyone's going to kill everyone. The guns are, you know, it's like that's not the best counterargument. The best argument would be, yeah, you know what, we would support possibly either a background check or, like you said in this phone call, if they are caught a felon, if they do have a violent history and they are stopped with a gun, then, you know, they go back to jail, whatever. You are for, technically, some form of gun control. Just by saying that, offering that as a solution.
Only against the violent felons,
right.
are definitely in that, because they've already shown a propensity and have been convicted of actually harming a fellow citizen.
Gun control people, just so you know, and again, there's a lot of wacky libtards out there. I fight with them once a week, but a lot of the gun control people I talk to are saying just that. Like, we just don't want violent offenders to be able to buy a gun without being checked.
That may be the basis of their intent. That may be the intent by a lot of them, but the thing to keep in mind is one thing we're always watching is registration. We do not want gun registration. You guys have it to some degree in California, and I think it's going to be getting worse. Other places, a few states have it. Again, the really strict states tend to have it. The problem with gun registration is it leads to confiscation, and indeed it does. We've had multiple occurrences of this in the United States. California has come up multiple times with confiscations. they started the defined assault weapons, and there was a particular type that your attorney general said, oh, well, no, we don't classify that particular SKS as an assault weapon. And then a year later or so, oh, we changed our mind. It is an assault weapon, and we're going to come take them away. We know who you are and where they are, and you better have the gun ready. And in Chicago, they've done confiscations. Washington, D.C. did them. It's New York City.
Well, how about this for a solution? Anyone that has a violent history or a felon of violence, because I do agree there are nonviolent felons. You know, if you're busted for smoking pot, you shouldn't be treated like someone who's a rapist and murderer.
You wrote a hot check 30 years ago. Who cares?
Right. Exactly. But if you have, I think you said hot chick for a second. Hot check, got you. I think you said if you ruined a hot chick. That's what I thought you said, ruined a hot chick. Anyway, that was an awkward laugh of mine. I got busted. Okay. So if someone gets out of prison for violent history, they should, how about this for a compromise? Go back and tell your friends at the VCRD or whatever it's called. If you are a violent offender and you have that history, you enter a violent offender registry list as a felon, and you are on every gun dealership, every gun manufacturer, every gun show, every gun dealer's list as a no-sell person. And the rest of us, it's kind of like fingerprinting. Not everybody here is fingerprinted. I've never been fingerprinted, so I'm not on a national registry of fingerprints. However, I commit a crime, I go in the fingerprint system. What about doing it like that?
Well, again, it will do nothing for straw purchases, which is how they're getting around that in theft and black market. But,
right.
Yeah, you know, you send in your girlfriend, and she buys the gun for you. Now, the whole thing fails miserably. She's not on that list. Number two, that
list. Well, she would be afterwards. I mean, if this guy goes and shoots up a mall again. Yeah. But, I mean, you can make that argument about everything, Phil. That's not right. You can make that argument, of course, if they catch her. I mean, there's really no law or rule of any kind. There's not even a constitution. It always comes down to whether or not you can catch someone or police it or make
it
law.
It's tough. Catch them after the fact. And right, maybe you'll get her then, and she can't do it again. So next time you'll find some hobo in the street and give him, you know, $50 and say, go buy me a gun.
This is a good way to wrap up this interview. There is no perfect solution on either side. But what I can tell you 100% accuracy will not work is that both sides keep coming to this debate without any intent to compromise or have a discussion. Nothing's going to get solved.
Would you say all the gun laws on the books now weren't a compromise? The gun owners didn't give up something really for nothing all these years? I can point to a lot of gun laws here. Where did they come from? You know, it's not like we have no gun control. If we're standing there saying, you can't give us any gun control, my God, look at the gun control we've got. Tell me we haven't compromised. And what have we gotten for it, you know? Criminals still get guns. You still read about mass murders in Chicago all the time, you know? We've compromised. The other side never actually gives it. What have we got from the other side? I'd love to hear that. Where have they given gun owners something? All they've ever done is come to us and say, you know, you've got all the eggs in your basket. We want you to give us your basket. And we say no, and they say, okay, we'll take half your basket. So we're still out half our basket, and we've got nothing from them. And we never will get anything from them. They've got nothing to give.
I think that's actually really brilliant point, Philip. Actually, and because this is not a live recording, unfortunately, I can't have any of my libtard followers call in and yell at you and offer or something. But I can tell you, when you ask me that question, I don't have an answer. I don't know what they are offering. I don't know. You make a brilliant point. Jen, you're kind of gun control because you're, you know, a mom and whatnot. I mean, do you understand his question? Is there anything there? Is there a counterargument to that, or did he just win that last one?
No, he wins that for sure. Okay. I mean, I think we've started with no gun control, and all they've done is add gun control. So, yeah, I don't think they've given much at all. I would want to say, oh, well, we gave you guns. and like I said, I have guns. I'm not anti-guns, and neither is my husband. He's a police officer. He would not want to take away people's arms. There's no way.
And police officers really are on that side. The rank and file. It's when you get to chiefs of police that are really politically appointed most of the time by a city council. That's where you get the guys that are going, oh, no, only police should have guns. You talk to the officer on the street like your husband, and, boy, it's a very different attitude.
Right. No, and he's very supportive of people that are not criminals owning guns. He would not want to take away people's guns because there's people like me. I'm not a police officer, and he would want me to have one to protect us. And, you know, he works graveyards, so it's nice to know that I have a weapon if someone tries to break in and hurt us.
he loves you. He doesn't want something to happen to you, and he's you know, he's lucky. Not all women will take that up. I was interviewed by a reporter from the Washington Post all day long about 5 years ago, and it was a front page thing that they did. And I was talking to her. She asked me questions all day. Finally, I said, "Let me ask you a question." I said, "If a criminal attacks you, you don't carry a gun, right?" She says, "No." "So what is your plan? You give him what he wants." She said, "Yeah, I would just give him what he wants. I don't want to carry a gun." I said, "Okay. You told me you were a young mother. He wants your four-year-old daughter. What are you going to do? Are you just going to let him walk away? Is that what you're going to give him so that you don't get hurt?" And boy, did her eyes light up. My God, it looked like X-ray. I mean, she had these glaring orbs looking at me like she was gonna kill me, you know, for even suggesting that. And I said, "Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to yell at him really loud, spit at him? What are you going to do?" And I said, "This does happen. We had it happen in Virginia. A guy came up and snatched a toddler from the mom. You know, it does happen. What are you going to do? That little child is depending upon you to save his life or her life if the police aren't right there, Johnny, on the spot." And I can tell you, she was shaken. She'd never thought about that. She'd only thought they'd want something from her when they thought about her child. And you know, and again, your husband's on the right track to have his wife armed, and he's lucky that you've taken that on.
Right, well, and I do get a lot of criticism because I have young kids. You know, like, "I can't believe you have guns in your home." And I'm like, "Well, of course they're locked, but I do not keep them on safety by any means. But they are in a gun safe that I have easy access to with a code. But I'm not going to mess with safety buttons when it's a stressful situation."
You're smart. You're smart.
She is. That's why she's the co-host of this show. Well, Philip, I want to thank you so much for your time. I will say the other alternative, I just want to make this last point, is that everybody is armed and everybody is open carry. And I would go so far as to say, this is going to get me in a lot of trouble with my mother, who knows, but I'm actually for that. If you would ask me, I'm chancellor, I'm in charge, I would let everybody open carry. I'm talking like on their hip, full loaded, going to buy milk at the grocery store, gun on hip like the old West. I would be for that.
There's never been a shooting that I know, an intentional shooting where you had a mass shooting of any sort, anything even close to that at a gun show. It's
right.
One of the most polite environments you'd ever want to be in. You know, you back up and you bump into somebody, and everybody's saying, "Excuse me."
Because they don't want to get shot. It's perfect.
Exactly.
I mean, really. Look at the history in Japan, like the samurai culture. You know, everyone was carrying a giant katana, and everyone was so respectful and nice because you know if you piss this guy off or you push someone or here, if the threat of violence really does change people's opinion, like you won't be such an asshole. A lot of times I see here in California, which again is a gun control state, I'll see two people arguing over a parking lot space at a Whole Foods where they're going to go in and buy yogurt, and it looks like they're going to strangle and murder each other. They're that upset about a 6x6 foot spot on the car. And I always think to myself, if either one of those people had a gun on their hip and they thought about the potential of shooting each other, they would have just waved and said, "You have the spot. No, you take the spot." Because they don't want to get shot.
Exactly. Yeah, even
yeah,
if you have a gun, you know that doesn't make you so that you're infallible. You know, just because
right.
I have a gun doesn't mean somebody else couldn't still shoot me. So nobody,
right.
you know, the smart person doesn't want to even take a chance. It's not worth
right.
it.
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you, the last thing I'll say is I have a lot of philosophies I learned from my friend who's a martial artist, and he's the most calm, peaceful guy you've ever met. But, you know, it wasn't always, and he went and studied this form of self-defense that, like, the guy knows, like, where to stab someone so they'll bleed out in 10 seconds, and he has this horrible, like, violent knowledge, and literally the most peaceful guy. And I asked him that. I was like, "How do you... I mean, this is a guy that I've seen people cut him off in traffic, and he'll just sort of smile and wave at him. And meanwhile, I'm the guy that's chasing him and flipping him off and trying to run him off the road." And he said to me, he said, "The more I learned about violence, the more I saw the potential for every situation to end badly for me or for anyone. And even if I got trained to the point where I was the most powerful martial artist in the world, I can still fall and hit my head and die. The fact that I have that knowledge in my head makes me think about every one of these situations that it's not worth it. If somebody cuts me off, do I want to risk my life? Or do I just want to let them go?" And there was this weird click for me that I was like, you know what? The threat of violence, or at least the understanding, I should say, the understanding of violence really kind of does calm you down and make you more peaceful. It just does. I don't know why. It's just human nature.
real quickly, Virginia law encourages that kind of behavior where you, of you being restrained. And this is true for most of the states. We're a stand-your-ground state. If somebody attacks you and you're innocent, you've done nothing to cause that attack, you can stand your ground wherever you are. However, if in any way, shape, or form you were part of the problem, you know, you yelled at somebody, you shot the bird at them, you did whatever to antagonize them, it all goes away. Now you've got to retreat, and you've got to retreat as far as you can. You've got to indicate you've given up the fight. Everything changes.
Right.
That's why you cut me off in traffic, I smile and wave at you. I am not going to give up that right. I'm going to stay innocent. I'm not going to provoke anybody.
That's exactly right, and that's what we'll talk about more at length on another show. So I want to thank you so much for this call. I'm glad you called in, and I got nothing more to say, man. Keep fighting a good fight. And send me a link,
Jay,
if you don't mind, on Twitter or to Jen, or actually Melissa, you've been talking to. I would like to look at your organization a little more closely, please.
Yes, you see, the 60 Minutes interview, that was a very good one that I was involved in 4 years ago. Take a look at that one.
Do you have any links or websites you want to give a plug out on the show while you're on the air?
Well, the main thing is if you want to go to our website and learn out more about the group, look at some of the videos, all that we do, it's VCDL, that's the initials for Virginia Citizens Defense League. .org, VCDL.org, all kinds of stuff about gun laws, again, all the stuff that we do and get involved in. So this is a real eye-opener. And like I
Very
say,
cool.
we welcome liberals, conservatives, whatever, you know. If you want to fight for gun rights, we're a great organization to check
out. Do I get a sticker? Because I got an NRA bag. I still have not gotten my NRA sticker. I'm very upset with them. They are grassroots themselves, but they're really slow and inefficient when it comes to that friggin' sticker. If I join...
Yeah, well, we've got all kinds of stuff. Our main button, we have a button we can provide.
I'm sold.
Guns save lives. Nice and simple. Guns save lives. And they do.
All right, I may join. I'm allowed to join, right?
No.
Or do I have to live in Virginia?
Oh. No, we've got people all around the world that have joined the organization. Some of them just people serving in other countries and other states. So.
You got it.
Yeah.
All right, well,
I'll
say thank you. And yeah, please do. And again, I think, you're not the most powerful lobbyist in the world. I understand that about this. But really, just I encourage both sides of this debate. There are concessions. There are compromises. There are discussions that can be had. But as long as both sides entrench deeper, it's just going to keep spinning our wheels and nothing's going to happen. And
hopefully
I think it's time for us
to give us too.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if those of you that are the pro gun control liberals, you better start printing your own buttons or something to give them if they're going to hand their guns over. Make it worth their while. All right, Phil, thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks,
Phil.
Bye.
Now I noticed Eli called in. Thank you so much, Eli.
Hey, Jake. Hey, Jen.
Hey. That was
Hi,
nice of you to call. Are you in the car?
Yeah, I'm in the car right now.
Oh, that was nice of you to call in, man. How you been?
Good. I was listening to some of the interview, I was thinking about, I was curious if you happened to hear that, I think about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the CEO of Starbucks basically announced to the world that every single Starbucks is a gun-free zone. Did
oh, really?
You hear about that?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that.
What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it's his business and it's his right. You know, he can do whatever he wants in his own company. I try not, like even the Chick-fil-A fiasco that happened, I ended up supporting the Chick-fil-A CEO because my thing, or even Abercrombie, I mean, my history has always been, if this is your business, if you're the one putting your money and name and voice on the line, you can do whatever you want. I don't care. If I'm not happy, if I want to carry my gun and get a cup of coffee, then I'll just go to, Pete's Coffee. That's just the
What's
risk of business.
What's funny, though, is it's fucking coffee. And do you know Disneyland is not a gun-free zone?
That's
Richie carries his. Yeah, he carries his, but there is no metal detector. He walks in. It doesn't say gun-free zone anywhere. But yeah, Magic Mountain is, because that's a little bit more chola.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's wrap this up. I know we have news, but there's a big turd in the room because I mentioned FEMA and we talked about Chicago. And whenever you have a gun control debate, there always seems to be this veiled, unintentional racism, or maybe it's intentional. But I can feel with my powers of empathy, because I'm a man god, that there are a lot of people thinking that NRA members or Phil Van Cleve or whatever are that they believe that really the issue with gun violence is that black people have guns. Not that, I mean, he dispelled that from the beginning. But when you start talking about Manhattan Beach and Cholas, it's kind of the same argument. There does seem to be this feeling like, well, they can't handle it as well as us white people here in Virginia and whatnot. So I just want to make a point, not saying you did that, Jen, even though you're a racist, horrible person, that the reason shootings are happening more and more now, in my opinion, are two things. Okay, because he made a good point. He used to be able to go buy a gun at the hardware store, and there weren't these mass shootings. Antidepressants and medication, and part of the pussy movement, nobody taking responsibility. Okay, that's the main one. And the separation and wage gap between the wealthiest Americans and the poorest, because the real cause of violence in this country is socioeconomic. And what I mean by that is if you're poor and you're starving and you don't feel a way out and you don't have your mom and dad around and you're fucked up, you're going to be more apt to commit crimes. It doesn't matter if you're a poor white person, poor black person, poor Mexican, or poor Filipino. That's just the nature
of it. Are you relating this to the mass school shootings, the socioeconomic opinion of yours?
What med school shooting? What are you talking about?
Are you like the opinion you have of mentioning that, you know, with all these shootings and gun violence of these days, it solely has to do with socioeconomic placement in society?
Well, I would say more clearly, there, you know, guns have been around 300-400 years, you know, Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say the mass shootings involved individuals. One was almost a PhD at a Denver university. Another one lived in a very high, wealthy neighborhood of Connecticut. Another one was also a student over at Virginia Tech. So these aren't really like, you know, poor people living in a impoverished society.
Absolutely.
They
but
just have
just
poor genes with a G.
No, to clarify, I mean, I'm talking gun violence, because when you talk about gun violence in America, that doesn't just mean you're talking the school shootings or mass shootings. I mean, if you look at the numbers for gun deaths in this country, it is far and away above pretty much everywhere else. That's robbery. That's armed home invasion. That's gang fighting. I mean, it's of course, you're going to find rich people that shoot people, but the numbers are usually, like Chicago, for instance, or Detroit, or Washington, D.C., or the cities where crime rates are off the charts, it tends to be in areas where people are poor, and which is why a lot of people...
But as a national debate, the discussion of gun violence hasn't even come in the picture until Columbine or until these mass school shootings took place. I don't think people, you know, obviously there's a terrible problem within the streets of Chicago, but it has to take a mass school shooting in an upper-class neighborhood of Connecticut or in Littleton, Colorado, for even like the whole country to realize that, you know, there's gun violence.
Well, you're indirectly making my point, because most of us that aren't living in poor areas kind of have this feeling like, man, they're fucking poor, who cares? You know, let them shoot each other. It's like how we are with Middle East foreign policy. Like, let them all fucking kill each other. But when it starts happening in our schools and it starts to be wealthy people and more white people, we freak out as a country, because it's like, wait a minute. We all agreed. We were all cool with all you blackies shooting each other on the street. But this is getting scary, man. There are white children dying now. We need to change our approach. That's what's bubbling underneath the surface. Everything is psychology. Everything. You can talk economics. You can talk gun control. I don't care what you talk about. I don't care if you're even talking about foreign policy or separate countries. The bottom line is it's people that run these systems, and people are run by their psychology. So the reason why gun deaths, in my opinion, if we're going to now shift our focus off the inner cities and black people shooting each other and poor people, and go now to the mass school shootings, I have already started to research that with both of you. We are starting to find a link in the high 90 percentile that most of these children and shooters were on a form of antidepressants or medication, which has increased since the mid-80s in prescription levels. And if you put a chart of the people that are on fucking medication for depression, because they're too fucking weak to work on their own issues, and you stacked it and superimposed it on a chart of these school shootings, not gun deaths, we're talking just specifically these school shootings and mass shootings, they would both pretty much stack on top of each other. And yet that's something nobody wants to talk about. And Brody made a great point on his YouTube thing that you blasted Eli and hurt his feelings over, was that, and I'm just kidding, that the real issue here is that there seems to be a mental health issue in America, and everybody focusing on whether or not it's gun control or how to do the guns is taking the focus off the fact that there's a lot of people on fucking mind-altering medication legally that have guns and are walking into malls and shooting people. So there's the difference. That's why in 1950 you could buy a shotgun with your thermos, and it didn't seem to be that different. And now it's like, oh, my God, everyone's shooting everyone. My school's going to get shot. My kids are going to get shot in school because more people are medicated, less people are taking responsibility, more people are pussies, and people are getting poorer. So that's my argument. Did I miss anything, guys?
No, great. You got it.
I'm the smartest man alive, right? And let's all talk about how smart I am. I see the world the way it is. It's a gift. My IQ is off the charts. Do you want to do news, or should we just end this shit show?
Well, I think one of the main things I want to talk about is that this seems to be such a focus, the shootings, whatever shootings we're having, whether it's the airsoft gun kid or the naval base, we're obsessed with them. But, you know, I went to look up about our gun, our deaths in America and what they're all related to, and it's not even on the list, gun deaths. Like, it must be near the bottom because it's not in the top 15. And the things we really should be focusing on are heart disease and obesity, cancer, diabetes, suicide. Those are the top killers of Americans. And why we're so focused on guns, I don't know, because they seem like behaviors that you can't control. It's someone going crazy shooting people. They can go crazy, like the farmer's market old man losing his mind. You can drive over people. We know it's the craziness doing it. In most cases, or poor, trying to get what they need. But England, people always want to compare us to England, saying they have less gun deaths because they don't have guns in their country. But they also have 45% more hospital deaths, and that's a real number. So, you know, they need to get a hold of their diseases there, and we'll get a hold of our guns. So.
Plus, look at their freaking teeth. You know what I mean? Like, they got a lot of shit they got to work on. But
yeah, they need
dentists. This is such a good point, Jen. That's why I love you. Where is gun deaths? Like, I mean, statistically, what number did you know?
It only went to 15 on the top 15 ways Americans die, and it's not even there. So it's down the list.
But it's certainly more talked about than why the fact are most Americans 900 fucking pounds and are dying, and my fucking insurance and Obamacare is paying for people that are too fat
and
to
liver
fit on
disease,
an airplane.
Cirrhosis.
Yeah, so people are
drinking. Suicide, influenza, pneumonia. Those are also things of, you know, people aren't taking good care of themselves. Diabetes, another typically from eating.
It seems to me this lack of personal responsibility is more of a killer and more responsible for every fucking problem than anything. I mean, really, at the heart of all this, eating too much, fucking drinking too much, all this shit that's really killing people, guns, even controlling your gun, learning how to fucking handle yourself, or going on drugs because you're depressed and not dealing with it and shooting up a fucking bunch of eight-year-olds. That's the heart of it. Nobody wants to go, hey, how am I doing in my life? What decisions am I making in my life that affect other people? And yet everyone else does, no. Nothing's wrong with me, chomp, chomp, snort, snort, pig, 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 snuffle, snuffle. Let's go talk about how that guy over there shouldn't have a gun. Snort,
yeah, it says six, you know, the top six reasons are diseases from lack of exercise and poor diet, and then there's the mental health. So.
Yeah. USA, USA.
But let's focus on guns. That's why we suck, is because we have too many guns and no gun control.
Yeah. Obviously, that's our problem, America. It's that people have guns, and guns are evil. That's what we should all be focused on. Continue to shuffle your fat asses in and out of grocery stores, consuming mass quantities of high-fructose corn syrup to save 70 cents so you don't have to fucking farm your own food because you're too fat and lazy and you're eating chemicals and you're dying slowly. Continue to do that and focus on guns. That'll get us everywhere we want to go. I'm on a soapbox
now.
Now,
I want to say, too, we did have someone, I won't say his name because we're not allowed to say his name on our show.
Oh, that must be Dan Webweaver.
He did mention, But he did mention, you know, what if we legalized all our street drugs? I mean, would we really have a problem with guns? The violent, you know, we're not talking about the crazy shooters like Aurora. We're talking about the street guns. Would we have a problem with guns if drugs were legal?
That's a really good question, Dan Webb Weaver.
Would we have gangs? Would we have any of that? I think the gun lobbyists should be fighting to legalize drugs instead of worrying about getting their guns banned. Fight to legalize all our street drugs. One, so I can smoke pot. Two, so that people don't fight over drugs.
It's a really good point, but here's the drawback of that. Now, Dan makes an excellent point. I do believe that if street drugs were legal, most crime and gangs and those kinds of things would go down the next morning because everyone would be too fucking high. Nobody would be fighting over territory because you'd go down to the 7-Eleven and get some crack. I do think crime would drop drastically. However, that leads you to the next problem, which, again, is really at the root of every problem in this culture and why I do the Jake Pentland Show every Saturday from 1 to 2 Pacific Standard Time on jakepentland.com, is that now you're going to have a bunch of depressed people that are poor because they're most likely, you know, they've been butt-raped, and they're pedos, and they're all fucked up, traumatized people that can't work their way out of it. Now you're going to just say, stay home and get high all day. And that's just a recipe for a disaster, because those of us that aren't poor, those of us Americans that have our shit, quote-unquote, together financially, 43 million of us are on drugs legally, and we're not dealing with our own issues. And then those drugs happen to make us go and shoot a bunch of people. So the very nature of this country is, really, drugs should be more illegal. Nobody should be allowed to fucking medicate at all. In fact, alcohol should be illegal. Everybody should have to force themselves once a week, whether it's by government or because I'm chancellor, to go to therapy. After you go through therapy and work on your issues, you then should get a card to do any drug that you want, although I do believe the desire will wane. I do. I don't think people will drink and do drugs and be on antidepressants nearly as much if they went and talked to a therapist once a week. So that's what we really should be doing. The real solution to every problem is National Organization of Free Therapy. Everybody should have free therapy. Fuck healthcare, because you won't need to go to the fucking doctor because you're 900 fucking pounds because you're dealing with your issues. You won't overeat. You won't fucking drink till your liver falls out because you're talking to a therapist. You're not medicating on food and booze and drugs. My solutions will solve every problem. Thank you very much. Eli, it sounds like you're home. I heard a door close.
Oh, no,
I'm parking. No. Well, I think we'll wrap up the show. Free therapy, and if everyone, put it this way, last thing I'll say, if everyone's on therapy, you know, and they're going twice a week, no medication, they're dealing with their shit, and everybody had a gun on their hip, so everybody's in counseling and armed, you know what that is? That's utopia, people. That's a blessed society. There will be no crime. It's true. I'm going to leave you with this. I want everyone to think about this. Just do a hypothetical in your house because I'm going to hang up now. I got to get to work. Imagine a world where everybody is in therapy, and no medication, no drugs, no alcohol. They're talking about their father that molested them, and they're dealing with the fact that they're a fucking lunatic. They're not medicating at all, and everyone has a gun. It's going to be the most polite, wonderful society that man ever saw. I want you just to think about it, and then call me next week and tell me what you discovered. That's your homework.
Well, I think therapists will be a little nervous about pushing people's buttons.
That's a good point now that I think about it. Yeah. Okay, but the therapists would also be armed, so it wouldn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah, they would actually
How about
you just
unarmed? Everyone unarmed for therapy. Let's do that. Everyone has like a lockbox on their way into therapy and puts their guns away, including the therapist, and then
that's the one place
after.
Where it's a gun-free zone. I'm with that. I think that's a really good idea. See, we're making utopia happen, people. All right. Anything else? Anything else you guys want to say? Or
no,
I'm... I'll take that silence as a no. All right. Thank you, everybody. Well, once again, Jake Pentland Show solved an issue. We solved gun control today, right? We solved... what else did we say? Just America, just call us. Just call Jake, Jen, and Eli, and normally Susie when she's here, and we will solve every issue. Thank you very much, everybody. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.